This week, the question is on the table. Can intervention do anything to ease the crisis in Iraq and Syria?
They have no strategy, nor could they articulate a strategy to counter what our intelligence estimates are over time will be a direct threat to the United States of America.
Senator John McCain there suggesting that the administration's lack of response in Syria led to the growth of ISIS, now flying its Islamist flags all over Iraq. But there's another school of thought, although it's not known if the administration has actively adopted it. The growth of ISIS, was it inevitable? And it will eventually collapse all by itself without any pushback from the U.S. military. Owen Bennett-Jones hosts the NewsHour on the BBC World Service. He joins me now. Owen, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Hi there.
What do you think ISIS's particular contribution to the debate over Islamic identity in modernity is concerned? There have been many movements in the past, and we've seen them in the last couple of decades. What's ISIS's particular contribution here?
Well, there are a couple of innovations that ISIS has made. The first is the use of the social media, and it has pumped out messages both through the internet, but also on text messages to Iraqi soldiers, for example, demoralizing them. And by producing an annual report, which is absolutely extraordinary, it has it looks like a corporate annual report and has symbols, for example, of empty houses representing the number of Shias they've managed to kick out of their homes, and a pistol for the number of assassinations, and cars for the number of car bombs, all sort of presented with very classy icons and so on. So it has got this ferocious ability to fight on the ground, but coupled it with a very sophisticated communications campaign.
Would you say that the Khomeini revolution in Iran was a confrontation with modernity and people like the Shah, and that Al-Qaeda, calling itself the base, was a confrontation with the sort of royal family in Saudi Arabia, and the Taliban is really just sort of a throwback to a kind of agrarian, pre-modern culture. What has allowed ISIS to grow so profligately?
Well, these organizations you can find things in common between them, and you could describe them as revolutionary movements which have got an Islamic ideology that they're attaching to that basic social urge to force change in societies of great inequality. I mean, that's one way of looking at it. And, you know, you can analyze it in various ways. But the fact is, if you look at the specific situation in Iraq, ISIS is kicking off the back of a government that is extremely unpopular, that is seen as sectarian, and that many people are objecting to. And the other important point to bear in mind is that ISIS, you know, the number of fighters that it's estimated to have in Iraq is something like 6,000. Well, you know, 6,000 people simply cannot take a country in a week flat, or, you know, a large part of a country in a week flat. So they obviously are an alliance. They've got other people in there. There are Baathists who very much object to the Maliki government. There are various tribal leaders who've signed up. And these groups, no doubt, will fight with ISIS once ISIS tries imposing its extremely violent form of rule on their parts of the country. So it is a coalition, and it is a coalition that will probably disintegrate.
Do you think the choice of Abu Bakr, the original Umayyad caliph who succeeded Muhammad back in the old days, is significant in inflaming this sectarian aspect of ISIS's identity?
Well, I mean, the point is about, you know, Al-Qaeda in Iraq when it was under Zarqawi, and now ISIS under this man Baghdadi, they're both pursuing the same line, which is extremely sectarian, violent politics. And so, you know, I've seen an hour-long video of called Clanging of the Swords Part 4, which is an ISIS video they put out on the internet. I mean, it is just extraordinary. They killed 38 people on camera. And there are many, many other people who are corpses in this film. It's actually a revolting thing. And presumably, you know, you're never quite clear who the victims are. But most of this is sectarian violence. And so this is what's driving them. It drove Zarqawi before them. And of course, it doesn't work because most people don't like it. And so when Zarqawi was killing Shias at a great rate and beheading them on YouTube and so on, you know, Al-Qaeda stepped in and said, stop doing this. This is just not helping. You're known as the Sheikh of the Slaughterers, and it doesn't help. It doesn't make you popular.
So to deliver, the lessons of history here, and you're a great person to ask about this, it was certainly said at the time that the Shah didn't really focus on the growth of expatriate critics outside of Iran in his time, that chaos in Afghanistan was responsible for the growth of Al-Qaeda, which led to 9/11. The chaos in Iraq led to the growth of Al-Qaeda in Syria, which then created this civil war now that we've seen in Syria. Has no intervention in Syria been beneficial to ISIS? And would any policy to confront ISIS inside or intervention in Syria have been helpful here, do you think?
Well, I mean, you can certainly say that ISIS found a lot of its strength in Syria, that it took a lot of territory there before it started making big gains in Iraq, and it is a coordinated effort between the Syrian and Iraqi wings of the organization. So, yes, the chaos in Syria has certainly helped it. But I think you do also have to ask the question, is it really the case that had the West backed the Free Syrian Army, as some people are arguing, that would have led to a democratic and liberal government in Damascus? And the fact is that if you look across the Middle East, the Arab Spring has been a total failure. So it's not really terribly plausible to say that Syria would have been the one place it worked. So, you know, you can look back on the Western policy towards Syria and ask all sorts of questions, but I think you have to bear in mind that there were no easy answers there.
Do you think Zahawari and ISIS leaders would love for the U.S. to return the situation to 2006 and 2007, when the recruitment for al-Qaeda in Iraq was at its highest and the sectarian war was even worse than it is now?
Well, not really, because it didn't work for them. And I mean, al-Qaeda in the Afghanistan-Pakistan borders realized it wasn't working, and it didn't work. So, yes, they had recruitment for a bit, and it all went well. But then people got sick of it, and they didn't want all these Shias being killed. So, you know, it isn't a strategy that works. And the whole point of what ISIS is doing now is that it is pursuing a policy that in Iraq's own history and elsewhere in the world has been shown to fail. And that is that when you go around murdering people pretty much randomly, and if you see their videos, that is exactly what they do. They're simply driving through the streets of places and shooting people on the pavement. I mean, it's just absolutely extraordinary. And it backfires.
And wait them out. That's your advice at this point.
Well, I mean, it's very difficult dilemmas for Western policymakers now. They have all sorts of difficult calculations to make. But the fact is that ISIS will, before long, have Baathists against them, Kurds against them, Shias against them. There will be all sorts of local forces who will be opposing them. And when you consider what the implications were of the West going in last time and the help that, you know, that gave to al-Qaeda to motivate and recruit people, I mean, you just have to put that into the equation when you're trying to work out what to do.
Owen Bennett-Jones hosts NewsHour on the BBC World Service. He spoke with us from Edinburgh, Scotland.